Spring, fall, as long as it's not at all, I think we're all going to be okay.
Spring or fall, let's play ball.
It's Go Look and Wingo here on ESPN.
Come
Radio.
On, Cliff. My kid just tried a rhyme thing and you didn't do anything bad with that. All of a sudden you bang mine.
Oh, they both were terrible. I'm sorry. Both were absolutely horrid.
Seems like a collective gong there and a collectively appropriate way to start the show. It's Go Look and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golick and Mike Golick Jr. starting off the show the only way we know how. Awful.
We just want to play ball, whether it's spring or fall.
Oh, man. We can't keep trying to. Yeah.
I'm just doing it on purpose now to make Cliff mad.
That's become abundantly clear is we cannot rhyme. And
on time.
Got that last one out of your system.
Well, it's a start. You know, eight left, man. Eight left. I got to get them in when I can.
Really just emptying the clip on all of this. Boy, oh boy, we are in trouble on this one. College football taking center stage last night. We've had so much news about the professional sports and all of the good things going along with that. ESPN had a college football special last night. We saw Reese Davis, a couple of others there, Heather Dinich, Joey Galloway and company, all breaking down what could be possible going forward with college football here. And the news came then from someone that we're very familiar with, and Notre Dame's athletic director, Jack Swarbrick, who brought up the idea that he believes that college football season should start on a delay, that there should be anywhere between 8 and 10 games in all this, and ultimately buying ourselves that time is probably the biggest asset to college football going forward here. Heather Dinich will join us in a little bit. Our ESPN college football analyst talked about what college athletic directors are looking for here in the next couple weeks.
They are going to exhaust almost all options they have to try and make this work. But the next 2 weeks, particularly the end of next week, July 31st, is a targeted benchmark to make some significant decisions. And the people that I have spoken to are expecting that decision to possibly center around whether or not the season starts on time. Next week, remember, this is when players are going to be allowed out on the field to do walkthroughs, actually have a football in their hand. They want to see how that experience goes to evaluate it before making any big decisions. Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby told me he took it even a step further and said, I want to see what it looks like when they have helmets and shoulder pads out there. So those are things that they're looking for. And also the return of students to campus is a major concern for all of these decision makers. August 1st, it happens at Notre Dame. Jack Swarbrick, their athletic director, told me today, just minutes before the show, he would like to see the season delayed.
Remember, again, Notre Dame has switched their students and classes. They're starting August 10th. They've moved it up, so that's why students start to go there August 1st, and then by Thanksgiving, the semester will be over, supposedly trying to beat what people think may be a late-in-the-year coming back
second wave
of the virus, if that happens. We all hope it doesn't, but, you know, obviously we don't know. So, listen. Why not push? You know, if you don't know right now, nobody's playing a full schedule anyway, right? So we're used to going all the way till that first week of December when you get the conference championship games. Then you have a little time off. Then you have bowl games. Then you get to the then you get to the playoffs. You have time to push. You know, Jack Swarbrick said they've already lost USC, Stanford, and Wisconsin because the Big Ten and Pac-12 has said only conference games. Jack said he'd like to get 8 to 10 games in instead of the normal 12. So you're not going to have a full season. Nobody is going to have a full season. So why not, if you have to, push? Just make sure, wait, take the extra time if you need, and then start the season. We all sure as hell don't know if we're going to finish the season, but let's make sure we can start it relative to what's going on around the country.
Yeah. Convenient, by the way, Jack pushes for between 8 and 10 games, which is exactly what Notre Dame has right now on the schedule after losing those three games. Interesting how that number tends to come in mind there, but it falls in line because outside of Lincoln Riley, there aren't a lot of people that are as comfortable floating the idea of the spring season and all this. Mac Brown was open and saying, I can't think about it right now because I need all my resources. Pointed at this fall with this one. Even talked about carrying a 6-foot stick out at practice.
Yeah.
Now, I feel like giving college football coaches 6-foot sticks is probably not the smartest thing that we can do. I feel like that only ends poorly for everybody involved. But we all know what we're waiting for in here, too, is we're waiting for what the SEC says. Right. It's been really them, the ACC, and the Big 12 that have been kind of hanging out, supposedly coordinating efforts on a lot of this and waiting to go. But and I talked about this with Peter Burns and Katie George on Best Week Ever this past weekend, because everyone's been talking about college football czar, need something like that, a college football commissioner. What we're getting with the union of those three conferences, them supposedly working together on what they're going to do going forward, is some version of what everyone wants, the Power Five working yes. together. And if there is a czar in that group, it's SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. He has been the most frontward-facing voice for a lot of these discussions, and he also talked on the College Football Live special last night on not putting a deadline on things, but understanding there are those important dates Heather mentioned coming up.
The challenge right now is to understand where the finish line may be. And you know, last week we increased athletic activity. There's an opportunity to do the same later this week. And so we've had a check-in point today about our preparations to do so. Next week is a week prior to practice. We will have seen a lot of professional sports activity through the month of July. NFL training camps are scheduled to begin officially next week. But we've got rookies reporting, so we've got learning opportunities there. And we've tried to use every one of these experiences as a learning opportunity to help inform our decision-making. And the milestone check next week is, are we ready to move into that stage of practice? And part of that will be a conversation about what does the season look like. And that's a conversation that's been taking place for weeks.
Listen, and that's smart. Look what others are doing, especially those that are going to be doing it like you, like the NFL, like Major League Baseball.
Which is good to hear someone say publicly, because we've very rarely gotten leaders in sports saying, yeah, we're actively looking at these other sports.
I mean, why wouldn't you look at what's working and what's not? Because there are going to be some pros and some cons on everybody's situation. So, again, by next Friday, July 31st, they want to have some decisions made, because as you get into, for anybody that may not know the college schedule, as you get into the beginning of August, that's when you start to put the pads on. Supposedly start to put the pads on
in theory
and get going. So is that going to be delayed? Is there going to be more of an acclimation period? Are they going to wait for some states to the spikes to start to come down? You know, that's the issue here. We obviously have is the NBA is one group, baseball is one group, NFL is one group, college football is not one group, as we know. So everybody's kind of figuring out on their own terms. The latest conference, the SWAC, has said they are going to play spring football and try and that's a whole nother conversation on spring football, forgetting even the players that want to go into the draft if we get that far, spring football, and then anybody who's an underclassman going and playing fall football right after that in the recovery time. That's a discussion we can have for another day, because everybody is hoping there is no spring football. And spring football, certainly if you have to push to spring, there's no guarantee it's spring football. You just obviously commonsensically buy yourself more time to play. But everybody wants to, most people want to play in the fall, and they want to figure out a way to play in the fall. And I do think it is going to end up being delayed. We're used to seeing those games. Remember, weekend zero was the end of August. So obviously the first weekend was the first weekend in September of the games. I could easily see that being pushed.
All right, well, let's stick with the spring idea, because a lot of people are getting comfortable with the idea of a push. Most people want to stick with the fall, and this was a big theme of the College Football Live special last night, was everyone pointing out the problems in the spring model and why they don't think it's viable. Coming up next, I'll tell you why I'm not so on board with that and where there's a couple of easy holes in those arguments. I have very little confidence in that, but I know we're going to try real hard, because this is a show of effort and enthusiasm.
I couldn't think of something to rhyme with show, which you said really quick.
I was going to say, we're running out of this real quick in all this one. This is a bad game of kings here on Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2, Mike Golic and Mike Golic Jr. here, rhyming the morning away as poorly as humanly possible as we try and stave off thoughts of what seems to be discussed more and more. It's amazing how quickly we went from, and this is almost inside a month's time, it felt like we went from college football spring season being a thing that we sort of whispered about in corners
right.
in a lot of this, to now where it's a full-fledged portion of the outward discussion. And that is something, whether it's been over the years, college football, the playoff in general, playoff expansion, anytime you hear Power Five commissioners, Power Five athletic directors openly talking about this stuff, it sort of rocks you loose, because it's generally a very tight-lipped bunch.
Well, it absolutely is. And listen, and I thought this, I know I've disagreed with you and Trey about the Power Five and those guys getting together, because they're not in this case. Will they ever in the future? We will see. But I think one thing we have to remember is this virus is going to dictate. You know, guys can all get together all they want and talk about what they want to do, but the virus is going to end up dictating when football is played, and the whispers are getting a little louder about the possibility of spring.
Yep, the Southwestern Athletic Conference, the SWAC, has already made a plan to commit to spring football. Their plan includes a 7-game conference schedule beginning with an 8-week training period that would start in January of 21. Each member institution is going to play 6 conference games with an option to play 1 non-conference game in all that. Lincoln Riley's been really the one Power 5 conference coach of note to come out and basically say there's nothing we should take off the table, meaning the spring season involved.
I agree with that.
Our own Ian Fitzsimmons on ESPN Radio's Freddie and Fitzsimmons last night talked about his biggest issue with the spring idea.
There's no guarantee by the spring that anything is different. And I hate to say that, but that's a cold, hard truth. By moving fall sports, and obviously the big one is football, right? To the spring, you're not buying a guarantee. You're buying time. But there is no guarantee that you're purchasing by moving football to the fall. Now, obviously, time does give you, you know, more of an opportunity to have a vaccine developed. But there is zero guarantee.
And I think that's the one thing that we got to kind of push pause on. And I heard this plenty on our college football, you know, show last night that was airing on ESPN. This idea that people are looking at the spring as a guarantee. No one is saying that.
No one has ever said that. No one. All spring, the spring football option is the last bastion of hope. That's it. It can only go to spring football, right? If you're going to have a season this season of 2020-2021, the last chance you could get it in is spring. That's all it is. This is the option. This is the option. And the last ditch effort is in the spring, because after that, you're going to have to start training for the next fall. So nobody has ever said, well, we have, if nothing else, we have that to fall back on. That's never been a guarantee. I've never heard anybody say it's been a guarantee.
No, because it's about time, and it's about basing what we think can happen on the, because all of this has been an educated guess around this, right? It's taken as much information on the sports side, I mean, taken as much information from the medical people that you have put around your program and figure out how we can best go about doing this. Because for regardless of what anyone's feelings are and all the hoax people out there about the virus, college football is going to base its practices on what it needs to do to keep its athletes the most safe in all of this. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And that's the thing we need to keep in remember. It's about being able to accomplish as much of this college football season as humanly possible, because everyone knows what rides on that. And it's about doing it as safe as possible. And we've seen the way college football programs have already operated, they're not going to regress on that. They're not going to start taking things less serious when it comes to safety. And so while we can go through a season and talk about a lot of things, they're worried about, all right, being able to make sure we field the team, being able to make sure we can go about things the right way. And all of that lends itself to, well, if you wait and you put more time in between now and then, you've got certainly the better chance for a vaccine, which is the hope in all of this for a ton of reasons in this. But even that, think about how much from the start of this until now, the resources around testing have increased. Our knowledge of symptoms, we bring up all the idea, Dad, you bring this up all the time, that Rudy Gobert and a couple of positive tests in the NBA shut down the entire thing. And now we have those tests and we have protocol and we have things around them and we have ways to kind of go about this better. And so it's just about buying time for that educated guest to continue to get more information.
And then from that, anytime you do something, there are the, you know, you can anticipate some issues, and then there are the unintended, you know, things that may happen. And you go to spring ball, all of a sudden you're talking about the draft, and you're talking about the NFL, and you're talking about another issue. And Bruce Feldman was on Freddie and Fitzsimmons, and he talked about the possibility of spring football and the effect that would have on the draft.
Half the schools that I talked to, 10, and then I found an 11th after our story went up, so it was 11 out of 21, had said that they thought they would probably lose 2 or fewer players. Now, there's a few schools, a school I think you know very well in the Big Ten, that might lose double digits. Clemson potentially could lose that. And I think when people think about, well, guys are going to sit out, they're going to first think about the big stars of the of college football right now, which is Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. And there are definitely significance there. But the reality is a lot of the programs that I talk to are like, we have guys that are not just locked first-round picks. they might be not even lock top 100 picks based on the film that they have right now, right? And so if you look back at the draft that just happened a couple months ago, LSU had 5 first-round picks. Not one of those guys, not Joe Burrow, who went first overall, not one of them would have been a first-round pick based on what he had done prior to this season. And 2 of those guys, Patrick Queen and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, probably wouldn't have gotten drafted at all.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. And that's an understandable point in all of this one, is that, yes, there are a lot of athletes that will need the spring season or any season that would happen in all of this to improve their draft stock. There's also a bunch that wouldn't feel like taking that risk.
I completely agree. I don't know where, and everybody's different in that. There could be a projected third rounder who says, I'm going to play to try and jump to the first round, and that there could be someone in that same round projected that says, I'm not playing. I'm not even going to jeopardize that, because basically what spring ball would be is that's that player's combine. Because spring ball, you're talking about working out in January, February, playing in March and April, and then you're done most likely before the draft, which is at the end of April. So basically your game film becomes your combine without actually doing the combine. It's actually based on football, you know, and not what you look like in shorts and a T-shirt, which is actually good, I think. But the problem is you're playing games with a real possibility of getting injured, because April goes right into May, goes right into hopefully mini camps if things are running smoothly by then. So while I agree partially with what Bruce said, there will be almost the same amount of players that aren't going to take that risk.
Yeah, and that we see players make that decision during the course of normal college football who will leave earlier than maybe they should in a lot of this, because they weigh the risks in their personal life as well as in football. The one thing, and this is the part we can't escape, is what it does to next year, and that's the thing that would take some finagling in this, because everyone brought up the, I think, more than appropriate point that it's a difficult thing to think about asking a group of college athletes to play that, you know, whatever length season it is in the spring, and then turn around and try and play another season in the fall, bringing up the health and safety portion of it. The problem is, this whole thing is about health and safety, and the health and safety monster that you potentially face in the fall might be a lot greater than the one that you face in the spring. And so all of this is trying to account for the lesser of the evils presented to you. And that's why, unfortunately, why it is the far, far, far less than perfect outcome in all this one. You just can't take it off the table. You can't do it. No one's claiming it's their first choice, but as you look at all this and the realities we're facing as a country right now, it's difficult to say it's not an opportunity that needs serious consideration.
I don't think it's anybody's first choice, but it has to be in there as a possible last choice.
Coming up next, and then we get to go on to the NFL like many of those college players want to. How does no preseason impact certain teams with Super Bowl aspirations? We'll get to that. Zero. You get nothing. You lose, sir. Good day. Actually, it didn't seem like the conversation was all that abrasive. The NFL and the NFLPA do come to an agreement on zero preseason games as they get ready to ramp back up. It's Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And all guests join us on the Shell Penzoil Performance Line. Like our next guest, our ESPN NFL reporter, Jeff Darlington, joins us now. Jeff, good morning. And you just heard it there. All joking aside, it seemed like this was oddly a decision that the NFL and the Players Association were able to come to together pretty amicably.
Well, yeah, but you know what the funny thing is? Well, nothing's funny about any of this, but you know what the kind of weird thing to me is? Like, isn't that sort of the way it should have been? Like, to me, it was really weird that there was any level of potential divisiveness about the frequency of testing for COVID. Like, if you can get access to testing for daily testing, everybody is incentivized for that. Even if the owners pretend like, you know, even if the owners, let's just say they didn't care about player health and safety. Let's just pretend that in an alternate universe, they were like, we don't care if our players get COVID. Their product on the field is still benefited by having guys healthy. So to me, it made total sense that they would get to this place. And to me, it makes me wonder if the NFL all along is simply using this in their back pocket so that when the financial negotiations take place, the much more important negotiations take place, that they can be like, well, look, we gave you everything you wanted over here.
So along those lines, so we have no preseason games. We have all the testing procedures in place. We have the roster size 80 instead of 90. I have a feeling this is where you're going to go, what you just mentioned. Is that what's next? Is the money part of it next? And what is it?
It is. I mean, they still have a couple little things to work out in terms of the return to camp. But, yeah, the money is. And here's the thing. They can go to camp
They can report for camp and figure out the money stuff later. I talked to one executive several weeks ago, even before the NFL players kind of started to raise their voices a little bit, who said that he expected, he thought that it would take until late July, more likely early August, for them to figure out the financial aspect of it. But there's really no incentive for the players to figure that out now. Like, they're almost incentivized to let this bleed into the season so that they don't have to take the hit this year. Not that I think they would agree to that anyway, but they're looking to make this thing actually be something that takes place over the next 10 years, that gets essentially spread out. The pain gets spread out over a longer period. The owners are the ones that want it this year, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I could see these negotiations actually certainly leaking into August.
And that's part of the financials of lost revenue and salary cap, and when they want to try and ease that, as you mentioned, owners and 1 year players over a longer time. But there are other financial things that would need to be done before that, wouldn't it, Jeff? Like opt out, if players are going to get money, if they opt out or have a reason to opt out, where are we with any of that?
That's right. And opt out is the one thing that does that absolutely is under the financial umbrella, but something that needs to get worked out before camp. And it looks like it is going to. They made a lot of progress yesterday on that. I don't have the specifics yet as to what the opt-out will look like, or whether players will feel, I don't know what the right word is, incentivized to opt out, or feel comfortable to opt out. It'll be very interesting to see if, you know, along the lines of baseball, they've had some star players opt out of the season. I don't know why I don't expect that to happen in the NFL. I don't know why I feel that way, even though certainly if there's players with underlying risks or family members with underlying risks, you would think that there will be those players. But for now, they're still working on that language, and it'll be interesting to see if that language makes it so that players feel comfortable doing so.
ESPN NFL reporter Jeff Darlington with us here on Go Look and Wingo. And the other portion of this that's really been crystallized in the last day or so was what we all expected to come, 90-man training camp rosters that are normally there being trimmed down to 80-man. But, Jeff, does that still does that have any effect on what might happen going forward with the talk of expanded rosters for the season when those bodies are going to be at a premium with everything going on?
Yeah, I don't think so. It's interesting because, you know, generally speaking, I think maybe people – the general fan sees that and kind of is like, oh man, what a bummer for those 10 guys. Generally speaking, I mean, you have two different cutdowns before you get to the 53-man roster. I think it's 70. I should know this. I think it's either 70 or 75. You go from 90 to 75 to 53. Generally speaking, general managers know the day the camp starts. They could whittle it down to 75 right then. You need the camp bodies. In this case, with this circumstance, I think that we'll see that normal whittle down, and then, to your point, you'll have your added guys for COVID, for instance. The practice squad will be bigger, and the active roster will be capable of having more players. But to your point, I think we'll I can't remember. I'd say like 62 players or something like that. So really, from going from 90 to 80, that's the, to put it harshly, inconsequential part. It's once it gets down to that sort of 65-60 number that I think it'll be important to have guys around available in case guys get sick.
It is tough to talk about, especially for guys like me and Mike, who, you know, I was a 10th hour rounder. Yeah. He was undrafted, you know.
Right.
That's and we understand it's guys' livelihood and they're trying to have jobs. And I get the fans don't really care much about that. It's about the guys that are on the field. But it's still tough. But it happens every single year. Guys are going to lose their jobs. As far as the positive tests, we've had 95 players test positive in the NFL, up from 72 on July 10th. Where is the level of concern about, is there, I don't know how many total tests have been given as opposed to these 95 positives as far as any kind of ratio we have?
Well, they're more concerned about what happens once those guys get tested when they're in the building, right? And that's the thing, they won't be able to get into the building until they have the two negative tests separated by 72 hours. So, you know, oddly for them, and we don't know enough about immunity at this point. We know a little bit more about antibodies. I'm not going to sit here and play doctor, but like those guys now probably feel a little bit more comfortable going in if they've had it. I mean, it's probably not my place to say, but I just think that the timer starts when guys start entering the building. And to me, the more concerning aspect of this, the thing that I can't kind of wrap my head around, is they're going to do daily testing for 2 weeks. So you'll know after 2 weeks, all right, you know, none of our guys have it. But what then? Like, players aren't in a bubble. It's not like the NBA where, like, okay, everybody, nobody has it, and we're all in this bubble, so it's going to be okay. It's like those people go home to their families. They go home to their family. Their wife just had dinner with a friend. She picked it up. He gets it. He brings it to his locker room, and poof. Like, that's the thing that I guess I can't wrap my head around. You can do 2 weeks of testing, and if it goes above that 5% threshold, they'll go back to daily testing. But I just, for me, in my head, given the close confines and the lack of social distancing that occurs naturally in football, it's very difficult for me to think that there'll ever be anything other than daily testing if there's going to be a successful season.
Yeah, Jeff, to that end, is the NFL's pushback on that based around, I mean, is it money? I mean, we've heard that overall the amount of testing needed for the league is going to be at $75 million for the entire league, which, I mean, you take that to all 32 teams and it's like $2.3 million a team, which seems like chump change for a lot of these owners. Is that the pushback on this? Because logically, I'm with you. The NBA is having all this success and saying it's because we're testing daily. How can the NFL turn around and then try and deny that?
I don't know. To me, that is the biggest mystery in all of this. And it's kind of what I alluded to at the start. Like, why is it even a divisive issue about, like, the amount of testing? I understand the NFL will want to keep some sort of, you know, aesthetic. They want to they want to make this look good for the public that they're not taking up too many tests. But, like, do they really care? Like, you know, they're going to work toward having as many tests as they can. If it's financial, to your point, that's crazy. I don't know. I don't understand why testing is an issue at all. And I certainly don't understand why after 2 weeks you would go to a different model if it potentially means a more likely outbreak.
Jeff Darlington joining us here on Golic and Wingo. So we go from the NFL, two guys that want to be in the NFL, the college players that we saw. We've already seen the Ivy League, their football, say they're not playing in the fall, so it would be in the following year. The SWAC has come out and said, we're going to do spring football. That's what we're going to play. And it's certainly not out of the realm that some of the Power Five may end up there, depending on the virus, which is going to dictate. So if that were to happen, what is the feasibility of the NFL, which works separately than the NCAA, obviously, of moving their draft normally at the end of April, which is when the spring season probably would end if college teams play then?
You would think that they could find a way to move it a little bit, right? The NFL is very stubborn. I mean, look, I was having conversations with people before this year's draft, which, you know, as we know, they did it and they pulled it off. But there was talk that, I mean, up until late, that they still planned on having it in Las Vegas. Like, the NFL is trying to just charge forward, whether you agree with them or not. I don't know how much they'll be willing to budge on the timeline of the college season. Certainly, if the college season is going to end, at a reasonable time, sure. But I don't think the NFL, for instance, would go into, like, June or July with the draft. They're just so stubborn about it that they'd rather force players to opt out of their season than to do that. And it'll be very interesting to see even, like, what happens to the combine, what happens to some of those aspects of it, and how does that impact college football players? If you're Trevor Lawrence, are you really going to play this season knowing that you're going to enter the draft? I mean, he probably will. He seems like the type of guy that would. But, like, he's the number one overall pick, no matter what. So it'll be very interesting to see how that impacts the desire of players to either prepare for the NFL draft or just go about their season.
You can follow him on Twitter at Jeff Darlington as all of this information continues to unfold. Jeff can be doing a great job with it. We appreciate the time this morning, man.
Golic. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Jeff Darlington, MD.
Yeah,
I say, I'm not playing doctor.
Yeah, I can say I enjoy the fact that, like, as members of the media now, when we talk about this stuff every day, we still have to constantly caveat for people. We are not doctors. We are taking all of this at the urging and behest of doctors, but we are not doctors ourselves.
A couple of things here. I want to get to the college and maybe spring, but it does seem odd that the NBA is in a bubble, and I know this is a numbers game. The NBA is in the bubble, yet they are still testing every single day. And look at the results they've had. Again, in the bubble helps, no doubt about it. To think you would be outside the bubble, and if you're testing every single day for 2 weeks shows you have a less than 5% positive rate, you are then going to choose to go to every other day. And they're projecting the cost of this testing by this measure will cost the NFL about $75 million, which, again, this is a $15 billion business, but we know this year it will not be a $15 billion business. I get it. But it just does seem weird. Now, I don't know it offhand, and we do have Buster Olney coming up, but I'm sure we could find out as well. What is baseball doing? Is baseball testing every single day? I don't know the answer to that, but we see what's working in a bubble, and I know they're in a bubble, but it just seems odd. If you have the means to do it, why you wouldn't? These guys are getting swabbed every morning, fill out something on an app every single morning. And then they're having these, you know, negative tests, which is a huge coup for the NBA and how it's all working for them.
Yeah, and the one thing people have brought up, and I think the one kind of argument that I heard leaked from the NFL side was this idea that they didn't want daily tests to give players a false sense of security and all this, which still seems like you're just not mitigating risk in a way that makes sense. The more and more we go along with all this, Jeff Darlington pointed it out, it seems like it could be one of those things because I unfortunately, at this point, because of the benefit of past experience, I can't say I trust the NFL to behave like logically and altruistically in this, right? Like, I can't just believe that, oh, they're going to just do the right thing if it's not in their own interest in this. And so part of me thinks, all right, these are all bargaining chips, Dad. You talk about this all the time when it comes to negotiation, that they're just sitting there, like Jeff said, saying, all right, we know the money's coming up. And kind of like that 2011 CBA where the players gave up a lot in the terms of, or I should say, received a lot in terms of limited practice time, doing things right on the field to try and take hits off their body, all these things in the name of health and safety. And then we know when it came to the financial side of things, a lot of people think that was a deal that didn't go very well for them because those are concessions that you have to make. Because like I always say, football is the one sport, you know, outside of hockey in the same vein where you've got to negotiate with your own health and safety as right. a bargaining chip in a way that really hamstrings what you want to try and do. And I'm just, I have that distrust that makes me wonder, is the NFL in this position again where they're saying, all right, we'll give you this, but we're about to hammer that salary cap down next year and not amortize this thing out over the next 10 years or do something with the opt-out clause or anything like that. That's just kind of the distrust, I think, that's been built up.
Yeah, and that's a big thing. And I don't believe a lot of people care about this. They just want to turn on the TV and see football. But there is going to be a revenue loss, and the owners want to kind of take care of that loss next year, all in 1 year, by knocking the salary cap down. And the players are talking about doing over an extended amount of years.
Which is sort of like the reverse of, remember in the NBA in 2015 when we saw that big salary cap jump and
right,
the players
right.
decided to do it all in that one offseason, and we saw these random dudes getting multi-million dollar
unbelievable,
contracts.
Yeah.
And then in the next couple of years, guys were hitting free agency wondering where all the money went in all of this. This is sort of the opposite
kind
of that.
The reverse, yes.
All right, one offseason, we're just going to hammer this thing once and then get back to business as usual after that, where the players are like, we don't want to just punish one offseason's worth
yeah.
of guys
yeah.
when we could spread this out and ease some of the hurt with everybody. So it sort of would prevent the reverse of what everyone saw that NBA offseason, which is just people getting money handed out left and right.
It was unbelievable. I said, if you dribble off your foot, you were getting $10 million a year. It was mind-boggling. And then there's the part about the possibility of spring football and what that would do to the draft. Would you move the draft? Is it feasible to move the draft? If you're ending in April, I guess you could ask the question, why would you move the draft? If you can still draft and the spring season ended, you know, maybe if you had to push it a week or two, okay. But the one thing that would be a head scratcher to me is, would you push it enough so you could evaluate the guys who played spring ball? Then we play a whole, it still kind of blows my mind. We play an entire season of football. And then we ask players to go train for 2 months on things they'll never do again, like a 40-yard sprint and a high jump and a broad jump and a cone drill just so we can draft them to go play football, something they just did for that season. I'm still befuddled by the whole thing a little bit. I know people say that the need for the combine. But if you have, let's just say everybody played spring football. That's the ultimate combine, isn't it? You just saw people play football. What would be any need to say, well, we need an evaluation period? To evaluate what? They just played. Would you want them to play spring ball and then wait a little while and evaluate them on how fast they can run a 40 or how high they would jump? That would be the dumbest thing. And I'm not saying they're going to do that. I already have a kind of a weird issue with that anyway, but that would make no sense at all, right? I mean, agree with me on that.
General combine commentary, you and I are always going to disagree because I don't think people put as much stock in it as you think and all that. I think it's part of a whole in a league that's obsessed with being able to get info. Remember,
right.
The reason you have to wait 3 years after leaving high school in order to be draft eligible is not because of any sort of moral thing or concern about players. It's because the NFL wants 3 years to gather information.
Exactly.
On these guys.
Yes.
It is the same reason they won't move any of this stuff around unless they good and damn well please and all that. I think the combine is an interesting tool because if you're talking spring ball, you're probably you could still be talking about conference only schedules. College football is overall when it comes to crowning a champion, when it comes to proving these levels of competition, an imperfect sample size because there's not a lot of cross pollination.
Exactly. Yeah.
You get a limited number of like even big time out of conference matchups to kind of see, well, all right, how do people really stack up? That's why these conference supremacy debates are so much damn fun, because you can really make an argument for a lot because you very rarely get to go out there and see it answered in any meaningful way on this. The reason I think it would be impossible to do that is just because of what you said. You're going to ask them to, in that amount of time period, the college players coming out, play a season potentially, go through a combine then, and then show up for your offseason for an NFL season that might start on time at that point.
Yeah.
Like, even the NFL is as much as we talk about them not always valuing health and safety in the way that they should, even they couldn't justify that. There's no way a players association could justify that for any of the members involved in all that. But it would be interesting with the draft, because maybe it's not a combine that you build in there, but there is the evaluation process of, all right, well, we've got to be able to go through and talk to these prospects, get in front of them, get them in a room. That's the value of the combine.
I could absolutely see that. And plus, guys will be fresh off injuries, too. How hurt is somebody, you know, in a given situation coming just off a season? I do value sitting with someone. I completely understand that. But to play a spring season, ask guys to go train to do non-football things and then go right back into doing football things, I think would just be ridiculous to do. And then I'm not saying they're planning on doing that. I'm just kind of following the flow of how it goes, even though this year we know you can throw a lot of that out the
window.
This
was just your ploy to get anti-combine slander in there.
Oh, my God.
But the evaluation can be interesting because everyone, the easy low-hanging fruit in all this as well, the NFL didn't move the draft for a pandemic.
Right.
Why would they move it for college football that they clearly already know they can kind of little brother in all of this? But their own selfish interest. If nothing else, the NFL is obsessed with being able to go out and evaluate to the level that they feel comfortable at. You'd have to imagine that would be a conversation, if nothing else, just for their own teams. By the way, we got the note here from our staff. MLB players under MLB protocol are tested every other day right now.
Every other day.
Working outdoors outside of a bubble environment being tested every other day, which is interesting in that. And something to ask Buster only about is how that came about, because that was a part of the labor negotiations with MLB. We didn't really hear a ton about.
No, we didn't. It was all about money.
We know lies in wait underneath all of this. So much more about the money in football and in baseball, along with the testing protocols. But coming up next, why Kawhi isn't the only fun guy looking for an NBA title this fall. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio.